AM 950 Air America, Minnesota. The Wendy Wild Show, our time, 8:13, and David Morris from newrules.org just returned from a big European energy conference. Good morning. Welcome.
And good morning to you, Wendy.
Now, did you just fly directly in just for this show?
This is my home.
Yes,
I flew directly in for the conference. It was in Stockholm.
Okay.
But I came home as quickly as I could.
Just to be here with us.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wanted to be here before winter hit.
Well, your timing was impeccable. Because, baby, it's on the way. David, I don't even know where to begin, so why don't I allow you to tell us what happened at this energy conference?
Well, yes. I think that you know, the difference between, I mean, Europe is flawed in many ways, just as we all humans are flawed. But what they do is they plan and they act, and we react. With all due respect to the state legislature, the idea that they're having hearings at the end of November about home heating prices and its effect on people is embarrassing. I think we know that it's going to be cold this winter. I'm pretty sure we know that. And I think that we know that the prices are going up and are very high. Combined, that means there's going to be a very negative impact. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Not what are we going to, how are we going to talk about it? And in Europe, they act. I mean, back in 1973, when the oil crisis hit, it hit them, it hit us, and it hit in very similar ways, and the prices at the pump were modestly similar at that time, and the Europeans reacted by imposing very stiff gasoline price taxes, very stiff. I mean, when I say stiff, I mean stiff. $2, $3, $4, $5 a gallon taxes is what they imposed. And so they weren't kidding around. I mean, they basically said, we'll let the marketplace work, but the marketplace is going to work based on the price that we establish based on taxes. And furthermore, they said, we'll take those taxes and as revenue, and we will spend it on things like mass transit.
Right.
We will spend it on things like home insulation. We will spend it on things that will reduce our dependence on oil.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes a revenue stream that we can use to get ourselves off of the oil escalator. The United States, did a number of things, and I have said as in a previous show, I'm respectful of what they did in the 1970s, but they didn't really bite the bullet. And certainly in the last 15 years, the idea of the federal government increasing the gasoline tax is just not, you know, there's two things that are not on the table in Congress. One is forcing engineers to build more efficient cars, and the second is raising the gasoline tax. Other than that, we desperately would like to get off our dependence on imported oil.
But wait a minute. The president did ask us to conserve.
Yes, he asked us to drive less.
But
yes,
that
indeed.
Doesn't seem to have really done anything, does it?
Well, it's very hard, you see, when you have to drive to work and there's no mass transit system for him to say, you know, tomorrow, walk to work. I mean,
that's
it's just
true.
Not going to work that way. Whereas in Europe, you know, it's completely different. And the conference was in Stockholm, and it was on what is happening at the country level and what is happening on the local level. Now, one thing for people to understand is that Europe right now is sort of becoming the United States of Europe. It's sort of in transition. So there is a European Commission, a European government, a European Union, and they can establish European-wide policies and objectives, and in fact strongly encourage countries to do certain things, but the countries still have a significant amount of autonomy as to you know what they do. So when it comes to Kyoto, for example, the European Union signed on to the Kyoto Protocol. That is, they agreed, along with almost all the other industrialized nations of the world, they agreed that they would take responsibility for the greenhouse gas emissions and they would reduce them dramatically.
So Kyoto reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
Right, which is
factories and cars.
Exactly, carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas, methane and the like. And so they agreed that they would reduce them. Now the countries themselves had to figure out the policies that they would then adopt in order to reduce them and how fast they would reduce them and so on and how they would do that. So it's sort of an interesting mix, and they get in some ways the best of both possible worlds, if you will, because the European Union establishes the policy And then the countries, and some of those countries are smaller than the state of Minnesota. Some of them are just about the size of the state of Minnesota. So the countries then get to, if you will, compete against each other in terms of the strategies that that they adopt. And now Sweden is a country that I very much want to talk about because, first of all, I think it's, 25% of maybe more of Minnesota is of Swedish descent. And secondly, that Sweden is only a little bit larger than Minnesota. It's about 8 million people. Minnesota is about 5 million people. Mm-hmm. The greater Stockholm area is a little more than half the population of the Twin Cities area. So in many ways, we can compare ourselves, if you will, to Sweden in many ways, and certainly in terms of energy we can. And I think that in comparing ourselves, we'll see what a difference it is, even when it comes to things like biofuels, where Minnesota prides itself, and legitimately so, on being the best in the country.
So should we separate out gasoline prices and supply as a separate issue from home heating fuel, which is primarily in Minnesota, I think 60% of us rely on natural gas, which is a separate thing from gasoline. I mean, they're two separate sources.
Yes, that's right. And others of us rely on propane, right, in rural areas. And so yes, we should
separate out.
We should separate them out. Now,
having a crisis in both at the same time.
Well, in New England, of course, the home heating basically is oil. But here it's not, and in most of the country it's not. Well, we're having a crisis at the same time, primarily because of the hurricanes. And so 40% of the natural gas production in the Gulf has been knocked out. So, I mean, that's what's causing the natural gas crisis. In other words, that might cause shortages depending on the on how cold the winter is. But there's other things that are causing it, which are more long term. And one of them has to do with the fact that a few years ago, the United States natural gas prices were low, and so everybody went and started building power plants fueled by natural gas as opposed to something else. It was very tidy and it was very profitable. But whereas previously natural gas was a seasonal commodity, I mean, we used it year round, but in most cases we used it for heating, mm-hmm, and during the summer months we didn't use as much natural gas, so you could store it. We had vast storage systems for natural gas. Now, in fact, we use about the same natural gas year round because we're now using it significantly for electric generation.
To generate electricity?
Right. And so what that means is that we can't store it anymore. Yeah. So you can actually have shortages in natural gas, and that's probably what we're going to have in the next few months because of what we've done on our electric system. So yes, we can separate out different systems, home heating and electricity and transportation, but what we're learning is that the word is fungible. That is, there are things that slip across boundaries and we need to be able to plan in some comprehensive way.
Fungible,
that's right.
Fungible. We're going to have to work on a new word of the day, I think. We'll continue in a moment. David Morris from newrules.org, a project. Okay, so newrules.org is a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And those words are really important because you just attended a big energy conference in Europe. One of the things you brought back is the European mode of operation is something happens, but you've already looked ahead and you already have some plans as to say, wow, you know, our natural gas refineries are, you know, maybe not plentiful enough, or our distribution system is vulnerable in this way or that, or maybe we shouldn't put all of our eggs in one basket and 60% of people in Minnesota rely on natural gas to heat their homes. Maybe we should be looking at alternatives. And David, coming back from that energy conference, that's one of the things that you saw. Minnesota is the size of some European countries. We could be diversifying and planning ahead.
Yes, we could. Now Minnesota is actually one of the best in the country in planning ahead. So what I'm about to say is not a criticism of Minnesota. It's saying this is the best, and look at what is happening, for example, in Sweden. And let me use the case of ethanol, because Minnesota prides itself. And now in the case of ethanol in Minnesota, it has been farmer driven. Completely farmer driven, not only in Minnesota but across the country. And so the farmers got incentives for ethanol, and ethanol went in the marketplace, and production began. And once production began, then one tried to figure out how to get a market for it. And so then you had a 10% ethanol mandate, although actually it was initially an oxygenate mandate that became an ethanol mandate in the state of Minnesota. Now they're looking for a 20% mandate. The production in Minnesota is now twice what Minnesota consumes, and so they're looking for a 20% mandated in the future. And in the interim, they're doing these E85, pumps and the like, all of which is by far the best in the United States in terms of coherence. But let's look at what Sweden did. Now, Sweden came late to the game, if you will. But Sweden has both a strategic way of looking at biofuels, and secondly, they are very closely linked between their energy policy and their economic development policy. For example, the first thing that Sweden did was make their buses run on ethanol.
Oh.
So Sweden's buses are 95% ethanol and 5% a kind of an ignition starter for cold starts. It has no diesel in their buses. This is all Stockholm's buses. Now, Scania is a Swedish company that makes buses. And so Scania is the only company in the world that makes ethanol buses. So now they're beginning to export their technology to places like Brazil, which of course has a lot of ethanol but has not yet used ethanol in diesel engines. And so Scania is looking to actually export what they've done. The second thing that Sweden did is they established pumps. Now, we have an E85 pump I think it's now over 200, about 200 gas stations have at least one, pump that you can fill up with ethanol. It's an E85 pump. Sweden did something very creative. They said, how does a pump work at the gas station? Well, you have three buttons, if you will. You have regular, mid-grade, and premium grade. But you only have two tanks under the ground. Mm-hmm. You have a regular and you have a premium tank, and mid-grade mixes the two. So they said, well, let's take a look at having a flexible fueled pump where you only have two tanks.
And
one is gasoline and one is ethanol.
Find out what the result was in a moment. David Morris from newrules.org, getting across the table here. Just returned from Sweden where there was an energy conference. And David, just before news, you were telling us about how in Sweden is this at the gas stations? They've placed the pumps side by side?
Yes, this is at the gas stations. And I was saying that Sweden had a strategic, coherent plan. Now, when I said Sweden, it was actually a few people in Sweden, as it always is, that pushed. But there seemed to be a response to that. And so, as I said, the first thing they did was to convert the buses. And they worked with a local bus manufacturer, a Swedish bus manufacturer, which is now exporting those buses and I think is going to have a phenomenal market in countries that are beginning to adopt ethanol. The second is that they changed the pumps. Now, as I was saying, that there are only two tanks under a gas station pump that gives you three grades.
Okay.
Because the mid-grade mixes the premium and the regular.
Really? Okay.
So
okay.
What they did was they said, well, okay, what about if we had the two tanks? One was regular gasoline and one was ethanol. Now, ethanol is 108 octane.
Right.
So if you mix the two, you actually get the mid grades and the premium grades. And so now you have buttons that can give you 20%, 40%, 80% ethanol. So you get your choice of ethanol.
You would just like dial it on the pump and it would give you
exactly
what you want.
And it blends.
Cool.
Blends the way you want. What it does then is allow tremendous things to happen. First of all, the ethanol producers can sell directly to the gas station. Right now in the United States, they sell to the oil companies, and the oil companies blend. So you get the ethanol producer dependent on the oil companies, and that's a very tenuous kind of relationship there.
Unless your campaign is funded by oil companies, but that's a whole other issue.
That's true. And the second is that you can begin to put pressure on car manufacturers. For example, Sweden has a 5% blend. We have a 10% blend here. Then what they began to do with these pumps is that they would set the pump at 10% for one button, But they would then list the cars that could use the 10%. In other words, they'd contact the car manufacturers and they'd say, is it okay for them to use 10%? And if the car manufacturers said no, then they weren't listed. Then when people began using the 10% in significant ways, they would change the list so it was a list of companies that would not let you use 10%, which put a lot of pressure then on the car companies to change their way of thinking.
Okay.
So it was a way to put pressure on the car companies. The next thing they did was to deal with the flexible fueled cars themselves.
Okay.
And the way they did it was to get a purchasing. They got a bunch of cities and other private companies to agree that they would buy 3,000 flexible fueled cars, and then they went out for a bid. And Ford, interestingly enough, responded and said, okay, we'll make a Ford Focus. That's a flexible fueled car. And in fact, that's what happened. And now the Ford Focus is actually the largest selling import into Europe as a flexible fueled car.
Oh.
So they now have flexible fueled cars on the road. They have flexible fueled pumps. They have their own ethanol production. By the way, the pump manufacturer is a Swedish manufacturer. And so they are now actually exporting their flexible fueled pumps to places like Brazil and other places that are now producing ethanol.
Now, you're talking about a country, Sweden. Minnesota is just a state, and David Morris is from newrules.org, which is a project of the Center for Self-Reliance. I mean, we want to be self-reliant. Now, can we, Minnesota, can we as a state, can we help to promote the same kinds of forward thinking that the country of Sweden seems to be incubating?
Of course, of course. I mean, we
but we're
we
not
have,
a country; we're just a state.
Yes, but in the United States, in Europe, you know, countries don't quite have the same authority that they once had because there is a European Union that is on top of them. Now, some countries are members, some countries are not members. Some countries have adopted the euro, some countries have not adopted the euro. But there are 25; they call them member states. They don't call them countries anymore because they are moving toward a United States of Europe. So their power is not absolute, and Minnesota's power is not marginal. So when it comes to any of these pieces, for example, Minnesota could have 95% ethanol-fueled buses, and should. Minnesota could have flexible-fueled pumps instead of E85 pumps, and it should. In terms of flexible-fueled cars, Minnesota should mandate flexible-fueled cars. I mean, Governor Pawlenty got a lot of publicity for having an executive order that people interpreted as saying you've got to buy flexible fueled cars, but in fact it didn't say that. It said that would be welcome. You're encouraged to do that, but if you can find a 30 mile per gallon car, that's okay. You don't have to have a flexible fueled car. And the final piece of it with Sweden is that they are moving directly into producing ethanol from cellulose, that is producing ethanol from wood waste and fast-growing grasses, because they're not a grain-producing country. And even though they now produce ethanol from grain in certain amounts, they already have a cellulose-to-ethanol production facility in northern Sweden, and they look to go into commercial production within the next 12 to 18 months. And it is being done with a consortium of cities in northern Sweden. And if it is successful as a commercial demonstration, then once again, they can export that commercial technology. So you have a country that is the size, well, it's a little bit larger, 50% larger, than the state of Minnesota, which has basically incubated an industry which is leading to a significant export market for their bus manufacturer, a significant export market for their pump, a retail gas pump manufacturer, and a significant export market to come for their cellulose to ethanol patented technology. Now, that's what I call a coherent strategy. Right now, Sweden is using less ethanol than Minnesota as a percentage of their gasoline. They are at about 3%, whereas we're upwards of 10%. But they have in place all of the pieces. And so at this point now, you can just hear the whoosh as they not only begin to expand internally, but they are now the technical assistance member state for the rest of Europe, and the rest of Europe has a mandate to increase their use of biofuels. So right now, literally right now this year, Sweden has signed a major contract with the European Union to provide technical assistance to the other member states of Europe to get them to achieve the European goals of biofuels production and consumption.
And this is what the Institute for Local Self-Reliance is all about, figuring out ways that we can be self-reliant instead of dependent on natural gas being shipped up here through the Gulf Coast, and you have a hurricane that devastates the port in New Orleans, and you can't get the supplies that you need to heat your home. If you're self-reliant, as Sweden is becoming more self-reliant, energy self-reliant, you're not as dependent on OPEC for what fuels your vehicles and gets you
where
you
need to go. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We call ourselves the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, which is a mouthful, as opposed to the Institute for Self-Reliance, because although we believe that individuals should be as self-reliant as possible, we're primarily talking about communities and political communities. We're talking about establishing policies that direct our individual ingenuity and our entrepreneurial energy and our investment capital in certain directions. And we're very positive in this. We think that we are very smart, that the human species is ingenious, and that if we put our minds to it, we can extract virtually all we need, certainly in terms of energy, from our local resource base. And so when Minnesota has 56 degree heat year round, 2 to 3 feet under the soil, then you say, well, great, we should be heating our homes to the 56 degrees from under the soil, and then all we have to do is heat it up another 10 degrees, and we're fine, as opposed to heating it from minus 20 degrees, which is the outside temperature, to 70 degrees or 68 degrees. When we have winds that blow across Minnesota such that we could produce 10, 15 times our electricity needs, that the idea that we're producing just 1%, indicates that we have a lack of vision and a lack of imagination. So the Institute for Local Self-Reliance says, first, focus on what you can do with your local resources when you've exhausted your ingenuity, because we're not talking about self-sufficiency. We're not talking about isolationism or autarky. When you've exhausted your ingenuity, then you can move out from there.
We'll continue in a moment. Got a question? Got a comment? Maybe you have some ingenious ideas you'd like to toss into the conversation. David Morris can be reached here at the studios at 952-946-6205. AM 950, Air America, Minnesota 848, The Wendy Wild Show, along with David Morris from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Just listening to you talk about the information that you've brought back from this European Energy Conference, David, it's giving new meaning to me, and I'm hoping our listeners as well, to the idea of local self-reliance, that, we can kind of... You ever see those emails that go around, hey, let's really put it to OPEC and teach them a lesson, let's all boycott gas stations this weekend? It's like, yeah, and then we're going to run fill up on Monday. What's the difference?
Well, that's exactly right. And sometimes we're too hard on ourselves, it seems to me. I mean, what one says is, the way that we're going to deal with OPEC is to make our neighbors feel guilty that they have an SUV. Well, that doesn't seem to be an appropriate way to do it. What we need to do is to figure out how we can use our ingenuity to get off of our dependence on imported oil. And if we find out that we can't, if we find out that, then we can take some very drastic measures. But it actually turns out that we have an enormous amount of free energy and ingenuity if we only just sort of put our minds to it. Henry Ford and Thomas Edison lived at the same time, and they were friends. Mm-hmm. And of course, Thomas Edison invented the electric system, and Henry Ford invented the transportation system. So it's sort of marvelous. And one day, Henry Ford came to Thomas Edison's house, and Edison lived in a big single family detached house and had a white picket fence around it. And Henry Ford found that the gate was just a little hard to push, and he wasn't quite sure why a mechanical genius and perfectionist to boot would have sort of a faulty mechanism, if you will, in his front yard. And so after dinner, he asked the great inventor, and Edison, with a twinkle in his eyes, said, well, the gate is attached to a pump. And when you swing the gate open, you pump just a little trickle of water into the house domestic water tank. Now, all the other houses in the neighborhood also had a white picket fence, and their gate was probably a little easier to push. But when someone visited, at best, they left behind good cheer. And in the case of Thomas Edison, visitors did a little useful work.
They actually left behind a little water.
A little water. Exactly. He extracted useful work out of a wasted resource, which is muscle power in this case. And this is the way we need to think.
What a great... You know, I've long thought we should have a treadmill to power the kids' iPods. You know?
Absolutely.
Or the television.
Absolutely.
Or,
you want to watch television? Exercise.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And save me on the electric bill.
Exactly. We wouldn't have to worry about them sitting on the couch. You know, couch potatoes? No. You have to be on the exercise mill in order to watch television, because that's where your electricity comes from.
Solve the high cost of electricity and the obesity problem in one fell swoop.
There you go.
David Morris, we're going to the phones, and John Colstead, Papa John from Mill City Music. Good morning.
Good morning. What an excellent show. I have a quick correction. As the electrical system we have today actually was invented by Nikola Tesla, the AC electricity, because he invented the AC motor, and Edison actually had fought that severely, but... that's a little side note. What I wanted to call about is that this has really been great. We should have more of this on the radio. And, David, you've done an excellent presentation. It's been fascinating. I can't get to work. I'm listening to this. But one of the things you're talking about, what they're doing in Sweden, I think that the reason we don't have those things in the United States is because they've been suppressed. And I'll give you one of many examples. I was alternate energy bus since high school. I graduated in 61. So this is one of my first gloves that And Wendy will tell you, I've been passionate about the universal health care issue and work with the Metro Independent Business Alliance to make a fair playing field for small business. But in 1975, just one example of energy inventions that have been suppressed is there were hearings, and it was chaired by Congressman Al Gore. Do you remember him? He was a congressman in 1975. He held hearings and brought in Gulf Oil. And Gulf Oil had funded... taxpayer expenses researched by a guy named Dr. Emmert, E-M-M-E-R-T. It was somewhere down in Missouri or the St. Louis area. I can't remember what university he worked for. But he was studying solid waste, all that stuff we were dumping in the dumps and now burning downtown. And he found that 40 to 60% of it was cellulose, and he invented a process that was a closed-loop process. In other words, it was a non-polluting process that would convert the cellulose 40 to 60% of the garbage we're throwing away into alcohol and carbon dioxide. And they demonstrated it with a demonstration plant that they could make a 15% return on their investment. That is, Gulf Oil could. And instead, Gulf Oil invested their $250 million into a retail store chain that got them a 7% return on their money. This was all revealed by Al Gore. And he said to the Gulf Oil president, doing ethanol was not in your interest, sir. Is that correct? And he said, you could say that, Congressman. Mm. So this is just one example of many that I've collected through the years, that a lot of the ingenuity is already here in America. We've had many inventors doing this for a long time. They have just never been allowed to be developed.
Because the people who are making money off the current system,
and because of their campaign contributions and the way that they control politics. And the way that our whole political system is run on money.
Papa John, let's go ahead and let David Morris respond. Thanks so much for calling
in. Thank you.
Well, thanks, John. Yes, that's absolutely absolutely true in everything you say. I am an enormous Tesla fan, absolutely enormous. And he, of course, invented or made use of alternating current. And what that allowed was long-distance transmission of electricity and the use of it in motors. But I will stand by Thomas Edison, whose first invention was the electric meter, and second invention was the central utility and the central power plant. But be that as it may, I think that the main point is that it is right. There's an ingenuity, and you know, I talked about Sweden. Sweden has no oil, you know, very little. In that sense, it starts. What does it have? It has wood. It has wood waste, and so it begins to think about ethanol and cellulose and so forth, because that's what its resource base is. Now, Minnesota also has no oil. And so, therefore, you know, Minnesota should be looking at local, you know, resources. But Minnesota is part of the United States, and the United States president and vice president were former heads of oil companies. And so it distorts with our focus. And I think that what we need to do is to say, look, let's look within our borders and use our ingenuity and see how far we can get.
David Morris from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We'll continue in a moment. The AM 950 Arizona. America, Minnesota, David Morris from newrules.org, a project of the Minneapolis-based Institute for Local Self-Reliance. How about next week we talk more about energy and...
I'm looking forward to it.
Intelligent design?
Yes. I love intelligent design. In fact, I am very much in favor of intelligent design, and I'll leave that as a teaser for people for next week.
Thank you so much, and you can find more information online at newrules.org. David Morris, every Tuesday morning at this time. My name is Wendy Wild, Gordy Hayes in Master Control. Great job. The snow is coming in tonight, and we'll join you tomorrow morning as you're stuck in the snowbanks while the temporary snow truck drivers are trying to clear the roads for you. So be prepared for a prolonged show tomorrow morning. This is AM 950 Air America, Minnesota.